So as I've been here now for almost 3 years, I'm learning something new every time we go through a ginormous thing known as the garage sale together. I learn more and more about you. John Taflin, I think it was, who said to his wife Heidi, says, it's not a good thing when the pastors are the ones getting your stuff in the entry line. They say that's not a good thing. So I've learned about your stuff, not trying to be eavesdropping or looking in your life that way. I've learned stories because I meet people at the garage sale that I don't know as well. So I have time to talk in a room and get to know you that way. But I'm also learning lessons about how we can be the church and how we can be faithful as the church. So if you've ever been to one of our garage sales, how many of you have been to one of our garage sales? Most of you have been, yeah. So most of you have been part of it in some way, either as a shopper or a donator or working the sale. It all starts out there in the parking lot. And there is an amazing line and system in place that people can line up and have their stuff picked up. And it starts right there with those shopping carts and those other carts as volunteers greet you with a smile, always a smile. There's Charlotte back there sort of calling the shots, and she knows she's sort of the one who has things organized and gets things going back there. Lots and lots of volunteers. Some of it is like heavy lifting. They got big pieces of furniture that will come in. And other is just a whole menagerie of things that need to be sorted and sorted and sorted. Some of it's kind of fun. Here's Matt getting to ride, and this was Nicola's contribution this year. This used to be Andrew's little battery-operated car, and this actually still works. So Matt was a little bit big for it, but he did have fun parking it. And then once it comes into the building, that's when the next level of sorting happens, because the job of those people out there is to get it to the right rooms, or at least get it in the right carts. And then the next the level of sorting happens, and people have to sort through fabric and linens and all kinds of things. And the electronics folks, like Cecil and the crew, they test everything to make sure that we're not selling anyone junk. Well, at least we're selling junk that works. If it doesn't work, they'll put a little label on it and say, just buy it as it is. But they lovingly test all of these electronic pieces. And in the jewelry room, all those teeny little earrings and necklaces, and they hang them up so beautifully on the display boards, and it's just a labor of love. And then even those tables in Fellowship Hall, which look like they're just full of stuff, even those tables are organized. There's things in sort of different rows that you can find. And so they're as organized as they can be, because that's the catch-all part of the sale. Some of it is really hard work. Some of you go home with really sore backs and rest well in the nights leading up to the sale. Some of it's a little more fun. Some of the times people just dress up with the things that come in. We had a beautiful bride's dress come in, and you get things like that. And even Fred was dressing up this week. I think he was inspired by the women who were being playful on the stage there. And Mel, who worked so hard, finally took a rest. It was great to see Mel take a rest. Mel is the guy that's in charge of all the pickups, and he recruits people to help him get all these big pieces of furniture here. And this is one moment of when he wasn't moving, doing something. And some of the volunteers here, it's fun to play in the costume area. This is Katie Roberts on the day of the sale back in the children's wing. And it is a serious business, and we are fortunate to have Todd and Jen, who are our crew directing traffic and helping people get safely across the street. So thanks to our real police officers who are here in our congregation. And you wouldn't want to mess with that woman, would you? This is like Jen, that's her face. You dare not park here unless I tell you to park here. Actually, Jennifer is one of the nicest people you'll ever meet, and she was so kind to all the people coming in, but she was clear would you say clear is the right word? Clear about whether or not you can come in, because you can only let cars come in when there are enough empty spaces in the lot. And so it's a very big production. And of course, there's Gwen. This was her 20th year of doing yard sales. And this does not happen without Gwen. I mean, everyone would say that this does not happen without Gwen, who has all of the pieces in her head and on pieces of paper, and it's all mapped out. Everyone's got their job, but she is the point person. And at the end, this is what it looks like. I took some of these pictures at 8:20, 25 yesterday morning. This is what people come into these rooms that are perfectly organized with toys and stuffed animals and all of the jewelry neatly in place and all of the stuff that these organizers can get and all of the linens lovingly labeled and priced and every piece of clothing folded or on a hanger and all neat. Look at the shoes all paired and sort of organized by men's and women's and work shoes and play shoes and all those kinds of things. And the children, this is a fun room to watch kids come into. And the eyes just sort of light up as they go into the corners there and check things out. If you go into that book room, it is like going into a library. Everything is organized by subject matter. So you can find, you know, good fiction here, nonfiction, biography, history, all kinds of things. There's a woman who brought in, I think, 17 boxes of cookbooks. And she still had more, apparently, is what her daughter said. So, anyway, Carissa took a good film of this. I hope that Lee is going to run this for us. This will show you all the people waiting. If you just go down with the cursor, Lee, to the bottom of that slide. You got it? Maybe.
Thought I had it.
All right. There should be a little thing that will show. Just go toward the bottom of the slide, and you should see a little arrow that will come up. Maybe. Maybe cross over, yeah. Chris, what are you saying?
Oh, there
you
go.
There it is.
You're welcome.
That was the line waiting at about 8:25 yesterday. I don't know when you took that to 8:15. So that was the line that wrapped around. And see, we get this all organized, and then we let these people come in. I mean, that's when it gets dicey, because you know what? They start to sort, too, right? We've been on a sorting mission all week long, and then they come in and they sort through stuff, too, because they're sorting through to see if there's anything that they see that's of value, anything that they need for themselves, or anything that they want to treat themselves to, or they have a gift to give to somebody else, and they're sorting through the stuff just like we've been sorting through the stuff all week long, sifting and sorting. They sort through books. They sort through clothing and pack those bags full of clothing. And then those piles don't look so nice anymore, do they? No matter how hard you try in those rooms, after like the first 7 minutes, it's just sort of chaos, especially in some rooms like the kids' room. And you know, they're just picking and pulling. And so it's hard to keep up with that. Now, the reason I tell you all this is because I've been thinking that sorting is probably a good discipline to have in the church. And it's something we've been practicing as a leadership team over the last 6 months. We've been sifting and sorting through words. We've been sifting and sorting through stories and scripture. We've been sifting and sorting through what we see as our strengths and our weaknesses as a congregation, the growing edges that we feel, the pull and the tug of God for our ongoing mission. And so we've been looking for words that would anchor us and propel us into the world. And today's text is a sorting kind of text, too. It is a distillation of what is important about Jesus' teaching. It is the setup, as you know, to the story of what? The Good Samaritan, right? This is the preamble, if you will, the pre-conversation that leads Jesus to tell the story of the Good Samaritan. And when the man comes to Jesus and says, "Tell me, you know, what must I do to inherit eternal life? What must I do to be part of God's kingdom?" Jesus throws the question back to the man and says, "Well, what do you think?" And he answers with a really good answer, a very orthodox answer. He says, "Well, you love God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength and your mind, and you love your neighbor as yourself." And Jesus says, "Right, bingo. You win the grand prize. Do this and you will live." This is like the distillation of his teaching. He says, "You're getting it. Do this and you will live." And you know the next part of the story. This is a whole nother sermon, right? Because the next question the man asks is what? "And who is my neighbor?" Because that last little part, love your neighbor as yourself, is not as easy as it seems. Sort of like clapping and saying letters. Not as easy as it looks, right? So the man is quoting from the book of Deuteronomy, the sacred text that Jesus knew and knew by heart. The man is quoting what's called the Shema. "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength." And then that in that next part of that passage in Deuteronomy 6, says, You are to take these words, recite them to your children, teach them to your children. I want a mission statement that our kids know by heart. That's what's why I was teaching them that today. I want this to be part of them too. Teach them to your children. Talk about them when you're at home, when you're away, when you lie down, and when you rise. We're going to have versions of our mission values that you'll see posted up around here, but we're going to have versions that you can take and have posted in your homes too. So for you and for your family as well. Bind them as a sign on your hand, fix them as an emblem on your forehead, make them a part of you. Take these words and internalize them, make them part of your everyday rhythms of your life. Write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. And literally, in a good Jewish Orthodox home, you'll find a mezuzah on the doorpost, and it's this. Shema Yisrael. Hear, O Israel. Shema Israel. It starts with listening to God, placing our lives before God to listen. Hear, O Israel. And those simple words are like saying once upon a time, right? They evoke something else. Or, oh, say, can you see? You know the next line. When you say, hear, O Israel, you know the rest of that line. And it's at the core of the Hebrew scriptures. It's at the core of Jesus' own teaching. Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. These are important distilled words, words that have been sifted through. And these were some of the words that we were living with as our leadership team looked for and listened for a new mission statement here. Hear, O Israel. I had the privilege of teaching a workshop this week as part of our residency and ministry program. This is for pastors who are learning the ropes, so to speak. They're learning how to live into their calling to be pastors. And Carissa is part of this group and a bunch of her colleagues. And one of the things I said to them is as you're preaching, thinking about the preaching part of your ministry, choose your words well. Sometimes less is more. Pay attention to the languages and the images that you use, and pay attention to the world because God is at work in the world. And the way that you are able to make connections for people so that they know this ancient faith still speaks to this contemporary world, if you can do that well, in few words, people may pay attention and may hear the good news of the gospel. Those were some of the same things I was trying to say to our leadership. Let's pay attention to the words. Let's sift through these good words and figure out which words work well here for us at this time and this place in our history. One of the other things I said to our leaders is let's pay attention to how other people are saying what their mission is in the world, both for-profit and non-profit people. You pay attention to the advertising of the for-profit people because they spend a lot of money on that stuff. You know the story about Wendy's and McDonald's, don't you? When Wendy's was starting out, they didn't have the research and development budget, mega budget that McDonald's had, and so they didn't always know the best place to put their restaurants. But so they said, well, we don't have money for that right now. What we'll do is we'll just learn from McDonald's. Wherever there's McDonald's, we will put a Wendy's as close by as we can buy land. Pretty smart. Well, as a preacher, I don't have a $1 billion budget either. So I pay attention to advertisers all the time because they spend a lot of money to study people and needs and desires and wants, and they try to tap into them, sometimes for good and sometimes, I would say, for ill. But I pay attention to what they say because you are listening to those messages. You are bombarded with those messages. We are as well. And so we looked at some messages of some people who have learned how to say their mission well in the marketplace, both nonprofits and for-profit places like Walmart. You know what their mission is just from those four words, don't you? Whether you shop there or not, that's what they're trying to tell you. You can come here and save money and live better. They leave that up to you to define, but it means acquisition and accumulation, right? But you can probably get more if you shop here. That's sort of their mission. The Humane Society, they have just, again, four words that sort of distill, they sift through these four words, celebrating animals, confronting cruelty. Just those two things, that's what they're about, celebrating animals, confronting cruelty. One of our favorite mission partners of this church has a very simple mission statement. Warmer, safer, drier. You recognize that, don't you? Appalachia Service Project. That's what they've distilled their mission down to. Warmer, safer, drier. And they put the tagline, transforming lives. The lives of the people that live in these homes that need lots of care. And the lives of the people that go serve alongside of the very poor in rural Appalachia. warmer, safer, drier, transforming lives. Now, I'm really jealous. We couldn't get quite this good with our mission statement, but Kaiser Permanente has come up with a one-word mission statement that you see and hear all the time, don't you? Thrive. Which I think is pure genius. If you're in the business of health and promoting health, what a wonderful word to encapsulate that. When you think of Kaiser Permanente, if you think of thriving, not just staying, not just going to visit doctors, it's a word that compels as well as draws out what they are trying to be as a company. So here's what we've come up with as a congregation, our leaders. We've come up with love, serve, follow. There were a lot of other words that we could have had on that list, but we boiled it down, we distilled, we sorted till we got to this point. And I really argued that love should be on the list and that love should be number one. Because I don't know about you, but the world that I'm living in these days seems to be way too full of fear and distrust and hatred and anger and people yelling at each other and people not understanding each other. And if ever the world needed the message of Christ, it's now. And if we can be a community that loves robustly in a Christian way, not just a Hallmark way, we have something to offer. In a world that tells you to get everything you have for yourself and accumulate and make sure you take care of yourself, we live counterculturally to that. We follow the way of Christ, which tells us we are called to serve. First, serve first. Others alongside of your family, in addition to your family, beyond your family. Right? Serve. And it's all in the name of Christ. It's all following in the way of discipleship, walking in the way of Jesus. Rowan Williams is the Archbishop of Canterbury, and I love really smart people who write really thin books. You know, Rowan Williams has written a lot of books and some really dense theology and some really wonderful things. I love that kind of writing too. But I always love these people who sort of get real basic about what it is. And he put out a little book called Being Disciples. And one of the first things he says in that opening chapter is this is what it means to be a disciple. To be a disciple means to be a learner. It means that we're in this ongoing process of transformation, opening ourselves up to God, opening ourselves up to the Word of God, opening up ourselves to the ways of Jesus. We are learners first. And what we are learning, and I love this, how to be a place in the world where the act of God can come alive. How we, as individuals, can be a place where people experience God's presence, God's goodness, God's mercy, God's care. And we as a church can be a place like that. Now, I overheard a conversation in the fellowship hall yesterday. It was somebody who was shopping, and they were on the cell phone to a friend, I guess, or family member. And they said, yeah, I'm at the flea market church. As if though that was enough to identify us, right? I'm at the flea market church. And let's be honest, we have that reputation in the community. People know that we are the garage sale church. And that's not a bad thing because we turn this event into a community event. And so much good comes of it because of the people that come, the sense of community that's formed, the missions that are enabled. That's a good thing. But I want us to be known as more than just the flea market church. I want us to be known as the love, serve, follow church. I want us to be known as the people who are walking in the way of Jesus Church. And I bet you do too. I bet you do too. We'll be talking more about that in the coming weeks. Next week we turn to that first simple but powerful and challenging word of love. And then we'll go from there. Love, serve, follow. Walking in the way of Jesus together.